This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome into a summertime edition of the WEEI Celtics podcast. I am your host, Sam Packard, joined as always by Jared Weiss. How are you doing today, Jared?
I'm enjoying the cool breezes.
Yeah, the cool breeze on 96.7 The Fox. All right, make sure if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe on iTunes, leave a review, do whatever you want. Just make sure people know that we're the greatest podcast in the history of time. If you enjoy our comedic stylings or our basketball takes, please follow us on Twitter at SamPackardNBA or
at CLNS underscore Jared Weiss.
Now, we have a great episode for you today. First, we are talking to Boston Globe media columnist Chad Finn. I can't believe I forgot his name there for a possible second, but I got it back.
Can't edit this out.
And then we're joined by best friend of the podcast, Chris Forsberg, to talk about all things NBA draft. And then I have a real wacky 20 minutes where we go over conspiracy theories, movie theater seats, and just a bunch of random things with the WEI Celtics mailbag. So enjoy. We're going to Chad Finn right now.
Chad, my first question for you, and you might be the most qualified person to answer this question, is there's this beautiful symbiotic cycle of hot takes going on between the Boston sports fan and the Boston sports radio and television host. So who is the chicken and who is the egg in this situation?
Oh, wow. I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm still trying to figure that out. I think what happens is if you're contrarian and you have, with social media the way it is these days, if you have a perspective, even if it's phony or completely way off, but it gets attention and it ends up getting retweets on Twitter and they can promote it on your TV show, whatever it is, it gets you attention, good or bad. That's better than no attention at all. And so that tends to drive a lot of the narrative around here with all sports. But with the Celtics, there's another element to it, I think, and that's, I don't know if we have quite, especially in electronic media, have quite enough Celtics knowledge. I mean, there are certainly hosts on TV, on WEI, on the other station that know it, but maybe not to the degree that they know the Red Sox and Patriots. And so you tend to hear people maybe opining on the Celtics and where they are in terms of their team building and who they should draft and who they should sign and all these things, who maybe either just jumped on the Celtics bandwagon or aren't even sure they're on the Celtics bandwagon and haven't really paid a lot of attention, but know that they need to talk about it. So for people like us who actually follow the team, cover the team, and have this awareness of really the remarkable things that they've done to get to this point, just to get to this point, it can be frustrating to listen to some of those hot takes about Durant's not coming here and Al Horford's a stiff, and why didn't they just draft Jimmy Butler in the first place?
Why didn't they, Chad?
Garbage. Yeah, I mean, it's, so it gets old when you hear it time after time after time.
That's one of the questions I'm going to ask you, Chad, is that the Celtics historically have been kind of the fourth place team in this town, and I haven't really been able to figure out why that is, and I was wondering if you could lend any wisdom to that.
Yeah, it's all cyclical. I mean, I grew up in the 80s, and, before I was talking to you guys, I was watching the documentary on the 86 Celtics, and at that point in time, there was nothing bigger than them. It sort of depends on two factors, which is how much success franchise has had recently and how much the fan base thinks they're going to have in the future. I think of this current Celtics team, they had the down year, Brad's first year, built up to, 40 wins the second year, and 47 was it this year? Pretty good leap, going from squeaking in the playoffs of 7 up to 5 and being the team people thought could advance, even though it didn't quite work out. The attention is turning back their way a little bit. The Bruins, who won the Cup 5 years ago, as we speak here, 5 years ago from the state, they're turning downward. And so I think in the winter sports, the talk in the near future and beyond is probably going to be about the Celtics because they're going to be the better team. But the Patriots, when I grew up, nobody cared about the Patriots at all. And then Parcells and Bledsoe show up, and a few years later, Belichick and Tom Brady show up, and you could argue they're solid number one in the city right now. And, of course, the Red Sox have always mattered to some degree, some big degree. But there was a point in time where the Celtics were number one, and I just think if you have that team that's a championship contender, the attention is always going to be there.
Well, so what are the factors besides winning and contending, obviously, that you think keeps a team prevalent in this city?
I think you could argue that it's more of a hockey town, quote unquote, than a basketball town. You drive down Route 1 in Saugus and see hockey town and see all the rinks all over the place. And Bobby Orr built those, not with his own hands, but with the way he inspired sports fans and kids around here with the way he played hockey back in the 60s and early 70s. And so there's a couple of generations of people who grew up thinking Massachusetts was a hockey state. The Celtics 86 and the 80s when Bert got here in 79, that was the heyday. There were some down years after that, and I think sort of the casual fans certainly lost interest, and other fans who maybe hopped on and pulled for that team but really weren't huge lifelong basketball fans abandoned them as well. And it's just so cyclical. I think success is the number one indicator far and away over what fans are rooting for at that point in time. And I'm never going to think of Boston or New England as a football country because I grew up in the time when they had some pretty good teams, never won anything but in the 70s and 80s, but had some good teams, and they were, again, that distant fourth. I think if you're just looking in terms of general popularity of the sport itself, taking the factors out of how well the teams are doing at that particular time, probably baseball and hockey 1-2, and I'd put basketball 3 and probably football 4. It just happens to be that the football team we've had here for the last 16 years is one of the, if not the great dynasty in league history, and so of course they're number one right now, but that can be surpassed when someone else starts doing great things.
Given what you said before about kind of the, I guess, both these two sports networks not really having a go-to Celtics person save for maybe Michael Hawley on our station, how do you assess the level of kind of just Boston Celtics coverage and the state of the Boston Celtics media today? Do you think the quality of the coverage is up there? And who do you think is doing the best job in terms of covering the team?
I think it's exceptional with whether you want to say digital media, online or blogs or even newspapers, print. The written word is outstanding because I think you have a really wide range of options there. Probably, I've thought this for a while, I think among those four teams we just talked about, the four Boston sports teams, the one that gets the best coverage and the widest range of coverage with the written word is the Celtics. And you look at the guys who cover the beat, there's a real variety of what they do and what they're good at. Forsberg's good at a lot of things, but he's probably the best at salary cap and breaking that down. And I know people in the Celtics front office, Rich Gotham's told me this, that they have a ton of respect for him because he asks the right questions about the cap, that he really has worked to understand that. And that's a great skill to have if you have it because it's going to give you an advantage. I think Adam Himmelsbach, who I work with, and Gary Washburn, they do really good things as well. Himmelsbach's a really clever writer. He's sort of subtle because he's not one of those really flowery guys, but you read his stuff and think, wow, that was really good, and I learned a lot. And he and Gary both have real good rapport with the players. I know Adam has forged kind of a bond with Isaiah Thomas. It's worked out well with some good stories. So I just think overall and with the blogs, whether it's Celtics blog, Celtics Life, whatever it happens to be, they're tremendous coverage of this team and always great and thoughtful options to read about. With print, with television and radio, it's hit or miss. I don't think the other station does, which is now the home of the Celtics, have the broadcast rights. I don't think they do a very good job with it at all. It's trolling and tends to be the, you mentioned hot takes earlier. I think that's really their approach, especially in the afternoon show over there, in terms of talking about this team, because they're not really that informed about them. I agree with you on Michael Hawley. I think he's the best in the city at talking about the Celtics on the radio or on television. And he was a beat guy. He worked for the Globe. He was a columnist at the Globe, but he covered some terrible Celtics teams in the 90s. So he's got institutional memory with this franchise, and that comes through on the radio. Television, the broadcast itself is terrific. Mike Gorman's as good a broadcaster, I think, as there is in the country at just about anything. Could have more respect for him. But some of the studio programming, especially on Comcast, I think it tends to be lacking sometimes in terms of the insight that you get with the Celtics. But in terms of what you guys do, the podcast, the written stuff across the various mediums, I think it's really great because there are just so many options to read about. And it's really fun right now around the draft because you get all kinds of various well-formed opinions from people who have done their homework and who the Celtics might take with that three pick, who they might not take. And so you get a lot of information, a lot of well-thought-out, clever stuff. And as someone who loves the NBA, thinks the league is as good as it's ever been right now, and really enjoys the Celtics and has a lot of respect for the way they do things, I feel fortunate to be able to read it and hopefully contribute to it in the city.
So you're on a podcast. You're on one of these Celtics podcasts right now. And obviously you listen to every single one religiously. Why wouldn't you? But
all of them, yes. I have 48 hours in my day.
So. Don't we all? But how has podcasting changed the landscape in Boston sports as an alternative for radio shows? Because, you know, like Felger and Maz, it's I think, especially when they talk Celtics, it's most amusing because while I never really listened to the radio live anymore, I remember Felger, at least when I was in high school and college, constantly talking about how he doesn't pay attention at all to the NBA. Then, of course, he'll come in flying in with some burning hot takes that burn the studio down. So do you think that because there's been, at least on the Celtics side, there's been like a podcast arms race where this podcast has been on for a couple of years. There's been pretty much every outlet has put together a Celtics podcast at this point. And you can get at any day of the week, you can get pretty much a new episode with generally a little bit of varying degree of style and viewpoint.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of good ones, too. You guys still on S Radio.
Thank you again.
And I've listened to those. And you know, I've listened to Rainy J's with Carolus and Jay King. And it's an incredible option to have. I mean, I live in Maine, so I commute about an hour and a half each way, 3 days a week. And I'm a sports media writer at the Globe. I have to listen to sports radio. I'm fortunate to get paid for it because otherwise I wouldn't do it as much as I do. I mean, I try to listen to every show to some degree every day, even if that's in podcast form. And sometimes podcasts end up being a respite. You know, you want to hear something good about the Celtics, and you know, Felger and Maz are yelling that Xander Bogaerts is never going to develop power, and you're like, I don't want to listen to this now. I want to listen to why Dragan Bender is the guy to take, or why Buddy Hield is going to be a one-dimensional player in the NBA. Or,
oh, that was our last episode.
Yeah, you know, so you can be selective about what you want to hear. And some walks of life, I don't think that's a good thing. Like, I think part of the problem with our culture is that nobody listens to the other viewpoint anymore. If you're Republican, you're watching Fox News and they're speaking to you. And if you're Democrat, you're watching whatever MSNBC or whatever it is, and they're speaking to you. And nobody has that back and forth. But I think with sports, it's a good thing because you can be really select. We're all fans of a certain team and in a certain market, and you can be really selective about what you listen to. And there are more and more good options out there and more rewarding and fulfilling options. And to me, that's nothing but a good thing. I wish I didn't have to listen to things I don't want to listen to sometimes. So it's part of my job. You guys are fortunate because you can pick and choose what you want.
With that being said, do you think that there's the Celtics front office kind of get a, I don't want to say a free pass, but there's a lot, kind of a less critical tone? I mean, if you listen to Kirk Minahan's podcast, which I'm a huge fan of, he's always pining for someone to just be there and stir the pot and just for the sake of doing it. And it feels like, certainly being around the Celtics media for the past 2 years, generally the coverage of the team is pretty positive. And there's a lot of, I'm considering myself one of them, kind of a media fan hybrid. So do you think there's enough kind of critical, I don't want to use a word other than take, but a critical perspective on the team? Do you think that's lacking?
I don't, to a certain degree. I mean, I understand where that perspective comes from, because you can, you know, Felger and Maz, to speak of them again, they yelp about, well, what's West Gainey? When Ainge and Stevens signed their extensions recently, they were yelping, well, one championship in 13 years. Well, Brad Stevens' career record is under 500, and it's really easy to ignore context and to rile people up and say, get them to think, well, you're lying to me. You're deceiving me to make your point. Yeah, the Angels won one championship in 13 years, but he took over a crap team and immediately got rid of Antoine Walker, and they went through some down years, and he made a couple great draft picks and made all these franchise-shifting trades, whether it's Garnett or Ray Allen or the Nets deal or Isaiah Thomas or on down the line. And I think with context, you realize, well, they deserve the benefit of that. Yeah, there have been missteps. I have no idea what they saw in Juwan Johnson. I have no idea what they saw in J.R. Giddens. They've missed on certain picks. But for the most part, I think if you measured every NBA organization and looked at what the Celtics do and how they've drafted and the absolute heists the Angels made, even in small deals, you have to really feel really good about this management team. And maybe sometimes it swings too far in their favor because you have people out there who are being deceptively negative about it to get their phones ringing, to get their articles read and all of those things. It's just, I also, you know, I love Kirk's podcast. It's terrific. But I fundamentally disagree with him on that point that you need more people pushing buttons and sort of being critical in the city. I think being critical is the easiest way to get lucrative gigs in Boston. If you're critical, you might get your own radio show. If you're critical and over the top about it, you might get the gigs Gary Tangway has or somebody like that. It's much, much harder to be reasonable and to think things through and to write well about things and to build an audience that way. It is to go to the roof of the garden and scream that Danny Ainge isn't always cracked up to be, or Brad Stevens is just a mid-level college coach, because that is going to get attention even if it's stupid. The hard thing is doing good work and doing good work and doing good work and getting attention that way incrementally, because it's just harder work. It's more challenging to build an audience as someone who's reasonable rather than building an audience by just being the loudest and most obnoxious.
You know, as someone who covers every single home game, I find myself a couple times a year wondering if I'm starting to lose objectivity. And then you'll have people from around the league or around the country talking about how Stevens is looked at as one of the best coaches in the league and Angel's looked at as one of the best executives in the league. You know, part of the thing is being naturally cynical, which is something that's engraved in your brain when you're born in the Boston area, you think something is off if there's kind of like a kind of a white background and there's not noise in the background behind whatever's going on there. And the Celtics get... I think Packard is right in that the Celtics do get generally positive coverage on the whole, especially when I've been talking to a lot of Knicks and Nets writers over the past year, and it's a completely different tone right now because the Celtics management, unlike those franchises, is seen as so rock solid that whenever something goes wrong, there's this kind of there's a subconscious expectation that it's going to work itself out because management is so solid top to bottom.
Yeah, I think what gets lost in that criticism, too, of cherry-picking the things that haven't worked out is that it's really, really, really hard in the NBA to build a championship contender. It's virtually impossible without lottery luck or without being able to convince one of the, 10 best players, seven or eight best players, maybe it's even fewer than that, to come to your team and play in your city as a free agent. Otherwise, it's virtually impossible to build a team that's going to hang a banner. And yet you look at what Ainge has done, and he's found so many good players in weird places or unlikely spots in the draft. I mean, you go back to finding Tony Allen and Jefferson and Delonte West, and what was it, the 03, 04, that draft around there. You go through history and see Avery, trading for Rondo at, 22 with the Suns, having them pick him for them, getting Avery Bradley late in the draft, when they were targeting Eric Bledsoe and ended up with Bradley, the other player they really liked. Or finding guys in the second round or useful players like Poe or Big Baby, or finding a defender like Marcus Smart at six when some people thought they should have taken somebody else. Heisting Jay Crowder in the Rondo deal, heisting Isaiah Thomas on that great contract from the Suns, and on. These aren't mega things. These aren't things that are going to make you an instant contender, but there are things that confirm that Danny Ainge is really, really good in his job. And like you said, if there's skepticism out there among the fan base or cynicism, whatever it is, well, ask Greg Popovich what he thinks of Brad Stevens. Ask somebody who's decided not to make a deal with Ainge because he felt like the deal might be a good one for his team, but he was wary of getting ripped off by Ainge. And there are GMs out there like that that don't want to deal with him because they feel like he's always got an angle. Ask around the league, like you said, and the Raves will come in pretty quickly about what the Celtics have done. No, they haven't got their Kevin Garnett or Kevin Durant or the superstar that they need this time around like they got back in 07, but they've put themselves almost in a position to be able to do that. They've put themselves in a position with that Nets deal that they have a really, really bright future. And if you can't appreciate that, even being a cynical New Englander, then I don't think you've really been paying attention. That's what I would tell people.
All right, Chad, we're going to get you out of here on one last question.
Sure.
Who do you think they should draft at number three? What do you think their strategy should be? Do you have a favorite prospect?
I hope Ben Simmons falls to three. He refuses to work out for the Sixers and the Lakers and stuff here, but that probably won't happen. I don't know. I mean, I was looking at all the various mock drafts the other day, and it's unreal how varied sites have different people there. I've seen NBA draft on Ned has healed still, and Bender's on a couple, and Jamal Murray's one, people think, and Marquise Chris is rising up. The Jaylen Brown thing came out the other day. So it seems like a real crapshoot. I think it's Bender, but I don't know. And I don't know when anybody's going to find out who they really like. I mean, the one guy everybody's crossing off is Chris Dunn. And to me, that makes me think maybe they really like Chris Dunn. So it's a mystery, and it's added a lot of fun to the build up to the draft. But man, I'd really like to know who they like. And if I had to bet, I'd say it's Bender 1 and Jamal Murray 1A, but I have absolutely no idea what Danny Ainge is thinking, and nobody else does either.
All right, Chad, thanks for joining us. Chad's a sports media columnist for the Boston Globe. You can find him on Twitter at GlobeChadFinn. And thanks for joining the podcast.
Thanks, guys. Lots of fun, and keep up the good work with us.
Big thanks to Chad Finn for joining us. Now we're going to dive deeper into the Celtics and the draft with the great Chris Forsberg, the best friend of the podcast, and I feel safe in saying that. Chris Forsberg from ESPN Boston. How are you doing on this lovely evening, Chris?
What is going on? So I have to follow Chad?
No, we haven't decided yet.
Well, they always say save the best for last. I feel like we're doing you a great honor here.
I was going to say, now if you put it that way, I'll be sweeter about it, but I just don't like the fact that he probably was, like, super great, and now I got to try to live up to that standard.
Well, with the power of post-production, I'm going to take this opportunity and say you'll go first, just because we have this history together.
Well, I don't mind that.
Okay, now let's talk about what Chad said about you in the interview that will happen afterwards. So we discovered that not only were you two neighbors at Boston.com's offices, which were they in Dorchester or the Globe office, or where were
yes,
they?
Okay. Exactly.
The infamous office, which is moving now to the financial district, I believe.
Are they selling that building?
Yeah, I don't know, but I know that they're moving to the like State Street or something like that, and they have to sell that giant map mural that's in the front. I've never actually been inside, so I'm not esteemed enough to have graced the presence of Chad Finn and Chris Forsberg while at work. But it turned out that your true passion before you were on the Celtics gig was for Patriots football, which surprised me because I don't think I've ever heard you mention the Patriots in like the 5 years that I've known you.
Well, it feels like another lifetime ago. But yeah, it's like I was a high school sports reporter, but it was sort of like, you made what you could out of it. And so there was an opportunity, especially at that point when sort of multimedia was just taking off at the Globe. And so they like came to me with a little handheld recorder, and it was supposed to be for like high school sports highlights. And I was like, well, I can go to some Patriots games and tape our reporters talking about these games. And like, those reporters must hate me so much. I joke with Jackie McMullen all the time. I'm like, man, you must have thought I was the worst, because here I am. After you go to a game and you write your column on Deadline and you just want to get out of there at 1 a.m. and then I'm like, hey, do you want to just talk for 3 minutes about what you wrote? And luckily none of them clotheslined me or shunned me, and I got to go do a bunch of Super Bowls, and it was fun. Yeah, I really enjoyed the Patriots experience. It was a nice sort of immersion. Like, listen, I didn't have to do anything. I just watched Gasper and Reese do their thing, and then just held up a video camera. And so, but it was a good preparation for covering basketball. I do miss the days of a 53-man locker room, because stories were a lot easier to come by, and you didn't quite have to swarm guys quite as much as you guys understand how it works in the Celtics locker room.
Well, I usually just jump on your shoulders in order to get to Isaiah, because it's impossible to get him unless you're in the inside of the circle.
For people who, and we're probably going too deep here, like, I don't know if Celtics fans will even care, but there are people that have like microphones attached to fishing poles in order to get close and hear what people say, and that's the working conditions we have.
The thing about Forsberg is he's not a scrum guy. He's not going to get in there just to get his recorder. He'll get his sound later. He usually hangs out in the background. There's some guys who are real about positioning and will throw some elbows, but that's not Chris.
Well, the real story is the cameraman farting at the end of the scrum, obviously.
Well, so that's the funny part, right? Because at back in the day when I was carrying around this video camera, I would have to have stools, or, like, you know, I was competing for that space. Now it's like, well, you know, Sam's in there with his recorder. I'll get that audio later. let you battle for position.
Well, let's talk about the team that we all actually cover and that you've been covering for the past 5 years. It's NBA draft season, and that means there's a bunch of workouts, a bunch of players coming in, and a bunch of people spewing conjecture, wild conjecture about who the Celtics are going to take. So right now, Chris, on the record, on the WEI Celtics podcast, who are the Celtics going to take at 3, 16, 23, and 33?
And 31.
Oh, yeah, why stop there? Why don't we go 45, 51, and 58?
Well, that would be ridiculous.
You know what? I hate to say I'm that classic guy who's like, every time they bring in someone new or someone new hits a bunch of shots, I kind of jump the bandwagon. But really, this is my first exposure to a lot of these guys, and you know, they know a whole lot more about these guys and have watched them a whole lot longer than I have. So I'm probably more prone to just judge it based on a 4-minute interview after not getting to watch any of their actual workouts. But I think it's pretty obvious they're in a tough spot. There's no clear cut three, and, you know, everyone thinks it's a 2-player draft, and we kind of all joke about, well, will Brandon Ingram slip past the Lakers? And I don't think we have to worry about that, but, you know, the hard part for me is that one half of your brain says the Celtics were a terrible, terrible shooting team last year. They put up, what, third most three-pointers in the league and made the third least three-pointers in the league. So they need shooting. And so when a guy like Jamal Murray comes in and makes 79 out of 100, or when they go out to the West Coast and Buddy Hield makes 85 out of 100, part of me is like, yeah, just get one of those guys. Like, that's got to help you. And then maybe they can help you quicker than someone like a Dragan Bender. But then it's funny, someone on Twitter was, as amidst all the hype about how many out of 100 these guys are making, someone said Jimmer Fredette made 84 out of 100 at like at some random charity appearance over the weekend. And, well,
he was drafted one spot ahead Klay Thompson, wasn't he?
I believe so.
And one of the great picks in NBA history.
Cautionary tale is that guys making wide open three-pointers in a workout might not be the best way to gauge it. And luckily, there are smarter people than me, like Danny Ainge and Austin Ainge and Mike Zarin, making these decisions. And they'll have a whole lot more of a body to go on than I will. But, you know, I think the one thing we can probably agree on, right, is that, you know, Danny tends to like the curveball. And no one thought Terry Rozier last year. And I wonder if it'll be a little bit out of left field. Like, you know, if they think Marquise Chris is the best player on the board, and even though maybe, you know, I know he's climbing a little bit and seems like there's more hype now, but you know, if people think he's not the obvious number three by the time the draft rolls around, I don't think that's going to stop Danny from picking him as if he thinks he's the best player available. And I don't buy the notion that, like, you know, there's some people that don't want another guard, but that I'll throw that out the window. If the best player available is a guard and they can help the team, then do it and figure it out, because everyone's going to be playing five-guard lineups eventually.
When Chris Dunn hits 100 out of 100 threes, they're going to have to draft
no.
At that point.
Here's my conspiracy theory. Dragan Bender is going to come over, and he's going to hit, like, 88 out of 100. Even if he has, like, a terrible workout, it's going to be – you'll hear something like, set all kinds of records, could not miss. Lakers should definitely take Dragan Bender at number two. And we'll see if that smoke screen can actually get out there.
My theory is that Danny Ainge has installed wider rims for these workouts just to drive up the value of the third pick. Because we hear all these stories, and I think he's would be prone to trade it. Now, not only is draft season time for wild conjecture in terms of who the Celtics are going to pick, but it's also crazy trade season. So So we've heard Jimmy Butler, we've heard Kevin Love, we've heard all the same names we heard at the All-Star, or I mean the trade deadline this year.
Love silly season.
Is there any validity to that? I know you're a very plugged-in guy. One, do you think there's any validity to it? And two, do you think that's a viable option? I mean, how much would they realistically have to give up for a player like Jimmy Butler or a player like Kevin Love?
Yeah, so I definitely think there's validity, because if we're being honest, you look at the free agent market and, you know, hey, like, I don't care how many crab legs you're throwing at Kevin Durant. I think we all know it's a pretty slim possibility, and that you're just kind of hoping that you get the chance to make the pitch. But, like, after that, there's a drop-off, and, you know, I don't know if anybody really gets you going. So the trade market might be the next best option. It might be the best option overall, because the Celtics have picks, they have young talent. There's potential to make these moves. So I asked our Bulls guy, Nick Friedel. I said, you know, just first off, give me a probability, and then tell me, like, what it'll take. And I gave him, like, a list. I was like, here's what the Celtics have to offer, like, every pick ever and all this young talent, and, like, what would it take? And he said that he still thinks the Bulls will keep Butler, but that they will actually, like, they'll consider anything. So if you threw the farm at them, they would have to at least ponder it. And given their sort of flux in terms of, you know, Noah's probably not going back, Gasol's probably not back, like, there's a chance that you could sell them on going the nuclear approach. And so I said, what would the package be? And he said he would want number three this year, Brooklyn pick next year, Bradley and Crowder. And I said,
which is a non-starter.
Well, so I'm on the opposite side of the fence. I'm open to listen. Like, I'm not running from the table. Like, I don't think that's a good deal, but I'll at least sit at the table and try and make you think a little bit about whether you come down from that bid, because I do think, you know, you got to get to give or give to get, and so if you can get, like, the biggest problem with the draft, right, is that there's risk, that there's high upside with these guys, but there's also, like, the bust percentage almost always outweighs the boom percentage. Like, the chance that they're going to be an all-star is, you know, say 24%. Chance they're going to be a bust is, like, 35%. So how do you mitigate that? You use your picks, you use your draft stash, and you use the players you've developed, and you get guys that are established and that you know will help your team. So I'm okay with overpaying if you know you're getting the sort of commodity that can push you over the top. Now, I'm not saying that the Celtics should jump at a package where you'd essentially be giving up four stars, including a potential high pick in a loaded draft next year, or what we think is a loaded draft. Now, I know some people are already saying, like, oh, no way you traded that 2017 pick. Brooklyn could be terrible, and that draft's going to be loaded. I'm not in that boat. It's as valuable as it's going to be right now because of the hype. So I'm fine with moving it if it can help you get the next star. And I'll take that chance that Brooklyn isn't the worst team in the league, and that it isn't the next superstar that emerges there. So I'm fine with including that, and I'm fine with moving three because there's no consensus on what it should be this year. So those picks are not, I don't want to say expendable, but if you're going to get an all-star in return, the sort of player that can really give you this boost forward, I absolutely listen. And it can be Butler, it can be Love, it can be whoever is out there that becomes available. And certainly you could rank those guys in different orders. But But no, I think you probably the only problem I have with the trade-off that we were kind of joking about was that, you know, there's a legitimate line of thinking, and Celtics fans will overvalue Jay Crowder, but, you know, is there that much of an upgrade to give up all that to get Jimmy Butler? And I agree. I don't think you need to go that far to just upgrade marginally. Now, if it was just Avery and you could throw in another pick, then maybe I think about it a little bit more, because, you know, then Jimmy Butler's coming in and taking that Avery Bradley position. And so there's ways, again, I would go back at the Bulls with something and see where they could find a middle ground, or if they could throw more picks at them and pitch them on a bigger rebuild and stuff like that. But I guess it all comes down to, is the team out there, you know, can they find the team with a star that is willing to hit the reboot or move on from a guy? And it's just tough. It's like, you know, we've been wondering this for a couple seasons now. It's just, you got to be patient and you got to wait for that guy.
I think the real question is the guy you're getting back, if paired with Isaiah Thomas, immediately going to make you contender? And I think if you swap out Jay Crowder, who's arguably was the Celtics' second best, not arguably, he was the Celtics' second best player last year, the marginal like increase in talent with Jimmy Butler, it makes them a better team in the East, but it's not going to push them over the Cavs. And I don't think Kevin Love would do that either. Maybe someone like DeMarcus Cousins, then that's another person a rumor is just going to throw out there, and we can debate till the end of time what the picks will be and when that's going to happen. But I'm reluctant to give up Crowder just because he was their second best player, and I'm attached. I called him Bay once, and he laughed at it. That's a moment you can't. It's going to last forever.
But that's the problem, right? Like, because you I'll be just as guilty as you is when you say that there's a marginal upgrade. It's more than a marginal upgrade to go from Crowder to Butler. Like, I know there's two sides of the game, and Crowder is very important on the defensive side. Butler's, you know, he's okay. And I don't want to, you know, but the offensive side of it, I mean, Butler brings it on a consistent basis, whereas Jay is a little bit, you know, that's the problem. Like, that's the finding the stars is the guys that do it consistently. And so, you know, I do think you would, not for one for one, you wouldn't make that move. But obviously, like you said, though, if the Celtics are going to get where they want to get to, then it's better to give up picks or, you know, other young players that aren't exactly part of their starting lineup, because you need the pieces you've got already to get to where you want to be.
I would say Butler's actually a great defender. I mean, he made his reputation on defense, and like any pretty much all great defenders, when they become really good offensive players, they have to sacrifice defense a little bit, because you have to, you know, you're using so much energy on the offensive side. So I think it would be a reasonable trade to trade the 3 pick and Jay Crowder for Butler. I think the 3 picks value is pretty, you know, commensurate with the increase in quality between Crowder and Butler. But obviously you started getting into the extra pieces there, and it gets a little overblown at that point. Especially because they have so many picks this year they could use as filler.
You can't blame a team for having a high value on a star player, because, again, they're hard to find. And he's 26 years old, and he's signed to a great deal, especially as this cap starts to inflate. So there's absolute reason for Chicago to demand the world for him. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, the Bulls will sit there and say, well, you know, what's our goal here? Our goal is to eventually find another Jimmy Butler, as much as, you know, Butler might have put himself in a tough spot because of what he said last year and the way his attitude, and not that that Bulls team was a mess to begin with, so it was probably just part of the problem, but, you know, those are the guys you're looking for, so why necessarily are you trading for picks that might not become that? And you're, you know, again, there's such a value when you have those guys that I understand why teams will ask for the moon.
Do you hear that sound, Chris?
What's that sound?
That's the sound of the WEEI Celtics mailbag
already?
Opening up.
Already?
Oh, yeah, we're going to it early because my main man, Seafoam Jones, got two doozies in there that I think are really going to blow this popsicle stand. But I got a one early on. You've been at these. This is a Sam Packard original WEI Celtics mailbag question. You've been at the all these workouts and interviewing these players. Which prospect has the best personality? Who's the Evan Turner replacement in the locker room?
Oh, man.
If you could draft for purely quotes, who would it be?
It's funny because usually there's definitely a guy that jumps up. Like Steven Adams, when he came in, was phenomenal. And you could tell that he was just on a different level personality-wise, and it's funny now to see it, just how it's really bared out.
Hold on. I'm still fuming mad that Thunder PR didn't let me talk to Steven Adams when they came in.
Still,
and you
so
saying
mad.
That right now just really got my blood boiling, but continue.
He's so good.
He just calls you mate, and it's just everything's better for New Zealand.
But you know what? There hasn't been anyone that's really, really like each guy that's been through so far that's been like one of the interesting dudes has said something like headline worthy. Like Jamal Murray said he was the best player in the draft, but it wasn't exactly like, hey, like thumping his chest, I'm the best player in the draft. He's just like, no, like, hey, that's what you're supposed to think. I'm the best player in the draft. And Thon Maker sort of said like, hey, I'm a lottery guy and I'm pretty good. And, you know, that's what these guys should think. But there hasn't been anyone that's really been like, wow, this guy's personality is going to separate him. No, like this might put even more pressure on the Celtics to bring back Evan Turner.
That's a fair point. Do you think they Danny Ainge will bring him back purely based on his personality?
Is good PR worth $10 million
a year? I mean, if you're asking a sports reporter, like, absolutely. Like, what's a max contract? Like, give it to him. We need that. We need that voice in the locker room. But no, it his play alone put him up in that probably that $10 million range. So that's the hardest part for me to reconcile this off season is that, you know, with their limited rights and the fact that he'll probably get money out there, that the Celtics are in a very tough spot to not bring back Evan Turner.
Damn early bird rights! I really put a dent in that.
The early bird rights just killing them.
All right, this is one of the most absurd questions we ever had, and just for purely based on basketball reasons, this is from at Jared Hoot 12885. Would you be disappointed if the C's only added Horford and Butler this offseason with a chance to sign Kevin Durant after the 2017 season?
You know what? I don't know. I want to be as polite as possible.
A simple no.
No, you do not have to be polite about that question.
A simple no would suffice. You would not be disappointed.
I would not be disappointed. Like in a land where I'm hopeful that the Celtics don't throw oodles of money at the Biombos and Barnes of the world for their mere playoff performances. I really hope that if the Celtics settle for Horford and Butler and the chance for Kevin Durant next year, that's a pretty good go.
Dude, that was a great question because I don't think I've ever laughed that hard at the question before.
Hey, man, the people.
Only a Jared could ask a question like that.
Did he use the sarcasm font? Like, I mean, I just wonder if he meant it, like, legitimately.
He did put only in quotation marks, so I don't know how we're going to interpret that. But thank you, Jared, for asking the question. And a lot of people asked questions and didn't use the WEI Celtics hashtag. Jared did, and that's why he gets top billing right now.
Nice, nice. I like what they reward the hashtag usage.
Another hashtag user is AK, or it's at Kungu, who's
I like Kungu. He's
great. he's a good follow. Follow him out there on if you're a Celtics fan. What would you?
I like you guys trying to pronounce usernames because like
how would you pronounce K U N G U U U
Kungu?
No, like, even back in the day, we had this problem with quapped, like, or K W A P T. You know, like how do you how do we say that? Like I never knew how to do it.
It's quapped.
So quapped. Well, yeah. I don't know.
I was always I was a quapped guy. Quapped.
Yeah, right?
If you're listening right now, Quapped, please send in proper pronunciation using the WEI Celtics hashtag.
Do you know why he'd use Quapped?
I don't know.
It's an acronym for Kobe Wears a Purple Thong.
Oh, how did you figure this out? Did you DM? Did you slide into his DMs to find out about the purple thong?
This will take us back to the Chad Finn connection back.
Oh,
when I was at the Globe, I went to the 2000, I think, I assume it was the 2007 finals. And, you know, we had just started using like Cover It Live when that was like a revolutionary thing. And he was like one of the main dudes in there. And I just had this curiosity. And I think there was a private mentions function, like this way before Twitter took off. And I was just like, yo, dude, what's with this Quap thing? Like, what's your deal? And that's when he divulged it. And I never asked for the backstory further behind it, but
it's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, you don't need a backstory there. We all understand Kobe's underwear choices.
But yeah, so like, I just want to listen to you pronounce Twitter handles for the rest of the night.
All right, this is from at Seafoam Jones.
Oh, what a good one.
You forgot Kungu.
Oh, I forgot the question. Oh, yeah, you're right. What would you consider a good draft for the Celtics?
Al Horford, Jimmy Butler.
If they can somehow draft Al Horford and Jimmy Butler with a 3 and the 16.
No, so a good draft would be, because Ingram and Simmons are not, in my mind, going to slide down, a good draft, in my mind, would probably be moving back, whether it's, you know, shuffling trading spots with Phoenix and letting them get Bender or whoever they're really lusting after, you know, maybe moving back again if there's someone who's hot and bothered for Dunn and, you know, getting more assets. I know people are sitting there saying, really? We're going to do this again? We're going to take the Patriot approach? There's your Patriot reference. And but if you're just not convinced that there's a huge difference between spots 3 and 9 or whatever, and you still come away with Jamal Murray or Buddy Hield or your shooter or whatever, and it gets you another mid-round pick, and you can get another big man, like, you know, I'm intrigued by Sabonis because of his bloodlines, and there's a bunch of guys in the middle there that I think you could bring in and potentially be something someday. I mean, Vaughn was the number one guy in the recruit in the nation before he kind of fell off the radar, and I just think there's some guys in there that you could find value in if you could stockpile picks. So I think this is a swings of the bat draft. Like, I'm not saying they're going to use all 8, and I definitely think they're going to move out, move up, and move around based on those picks. But if you could walk away with a pile of guys that you think have a chance, and some guys maybe a little bit further down the road, I think that's a good draft.
My successful draft would be any situation where they only end up adding 2 guys to the roster this year, just because they don't have roster space. And unless they're trying to make the main Red Claws the best team in the history of time, it just doesn't make any sense. If you look at the roster of just guys who have guaranteed contracts for next year, there's already 10 or 11 people. It would make no sense to use anywhere close to all 8, even adding 4 people. I expect a bevy of trades. A bevy of trades.
But what about, and not to get away from the mailbag real quick, but what about this? Like, I know people say the same thing, like, oh, you don't want to end up with all these people. What if you just created this super crazy intense camp and it's cutthroat and like survival of the fittest? Like, who wants to make this roster? And that you throw James Young and RJ Hunter and all these guys in there and you're like, hey, we only got 4 spots for 80. Who wants it? Let's see who actually develops. I think that would actually be a good thing for this team in order to develop young talent. And then you get all these guys under like crazy good deals and you still have all that cap space and you still have that flexibility. You could really position yourself well to build into the future.
What if that's what it took to get Jimmy Buckets to finally reach his potential? Like, if he just needs a little healthy competition.
I don't know.
That's all you have to say about James Young. I think that was the perfect response. All right, we're going to go to the last 3 from probably the MVP mailbag person, Seafoam Jones, a man I know very well. My favorite question of his is, who was your first celebrity crush, parentheses, preferably animated?
See, the last part of that question really freaks me out.
I've got that answer ready for you.
I mean, is he looking for the princess in Mario Brothers or, like, someone from Zelda? Like, I don't know why the animated part.
I mean, if you loved your Ocarina of Time, then you got to own up to it.
I don't think there's anyone animated that I ever cut out their picture and put them on my walls. But I grew up in a time when animation wasn't quite as snazzy as it was.
Now, I asked Seafoam Jones, actually, before he answered this mailbag question, this is a discussion we had earlier, and I think he answered Tails from Sonic and Tails.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
But so let's
see.
Let's...
Mine was going to be Lola Bunny from Space Jam.
Oh, yeah, she could hoop.
Yeah. I was 6 years old when that movie came out, and I was in love because I had never met a bunny that beautiful before.
All right, Chris, so on the hot seat.
Is Chris still here?
Yeah, good.
All right, we'll cross
your
out the...
Your first celebrity crush.
Yeah, we'll cross out the animated.
Human or animated, your choice.
Okay, let's cross out the animated. I don't know. Like, I'm going to date myself now. Like, I like to think that I'm hip and cool with y'all.
Like Marilyn Monroe.
You're three.
Eleanor Roosevelt.
It was Tiffany. You saw her at a mall when you were 6 years, no, 35 years old.
I don't remember at least being really young and like cutting picture out of a magazine or putting it on my wall or anything. I think the first thing the only thing that jumps to mind is that is Jennifer Aniston was on the cover of Rolling Stone in like 96, and that was a pretty, I think, of teenage boys, that was a pretty seminal moment. But that's the only thing that jumps to mind.
I was a huge Jennifer Aniston fan. I went out, I got the Rachel haircut. I mean, I was totally in.
Didn't we all?
All right, moving on to Seafoam Jones' next best question is, what conspiracy theory just kind of likes make you think, you know? Like, what's one that just made you ponder for a little bit extra?
I really wish you would just do me a favor in the future and just send me these before.
He added you on this one. You had a chance if you looked at your mentions.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
You know what? Okay, I'll blame it on this, is that my mentions have been absolutely obliterated by Lakers fans who hated the trade that Chad Ford brought up about, you know, Randall and Russell for some of the Celtics draft picks. And, like, they bombarded me, like, as if,
it was your fault, Chris. Far-fetched.
I guess so. I'd like, don't shoot the messenger, but like, hey, it's silly season. We all come up with these trades that are that you can shoot holes in. You know, Celtics fans, like I said, we just came up with a Bulls Celtics one where Celtics fans would like scoff at it, but I don't think it's that ridiculous. And so I didn't see that one. Conspiracy theory that makes me think. Frozen envelopes, but to keep it in the NBA. I know it's not great, but I'm sorry.
No, Jason Concepcion did a piece on that earlier today for The Ringer, actually.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
That's the thing about the NBA is I heard a lot of people, actually Zach Lowe said on his podcast that if the series was tied at 2, Draymond Green would not have been suspended. So just the very fact that like respectable reporters generally believe that it's that subjective and that the NBA kind of can control things from behind the curtain makes you think that there's something to buy in. It's just fun to have those NBA conspiracy theories.
It's always going to be there, right? Like everyone thinks the refs are against them, and just, you know. But hey, it's also a business, and a business that's driven by entertainment. And like, it's only natural to believe that you're going to want to even the playing field as much as you can. It doesn't mean it's true. It just means that we're always gonna wonder.
I mean, the first draft, the lottery winner every year is always a fascinating conspiracy theory. Every single one for the past like 6 years has always been really easily drawn.
I like the conspiracy theory that they didn't actually do a drawing this year.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
they forgot, and so they just went with the draft order as it was.
And they just told Mutombo way early that they were going to do that.
That would be great.
All right, I have two conspiracy theories, both surrounding the same event. One I kind of buy into, and one I made up myself. I'll let you guys pick which one you want me to talk about.
I want the one you made up.
All right, JFK was a suicide.
I mean, I'm sure you've got the evidence to back that up.
All right, let's run through this right now. I've run the.
This is Celtics related, right?
No, not at all.
No, okay.
All right, JFK was in World War II. He got in a crash on his boat and was in tremendous back pain throughout his entire presidency. So much so that he really just didn't want to do it anymore. He didn't want to go on. But he's a Kennedy, and he's the president of the United States, and he's a Catholic. So suicide is not an option. So he comes up with this whole plan with the Cubans. RFK's in there somewhere. Zanzibar slacks. And he gets that done. And then he goes out as a martyr and gets some of the best domestic legislation passed that was going to, in his name, Voting Rights Act of 1964 and Civil Rights Act of 1965. So he had this whole grand plan all along to basically relieve himself of this terrible back pain and push this country forward in a way that they were not ready to do unless he died and was removed from office. Your thoughts?
What was your other theory?
Oh, the other one that's like quite is there's some validity to is that he was actually killed by a Secret Service agent who is following behind him and who unwittingly had his gun go off
And that's the reason for the whole cover-up, because they didn't want to admit that this was a ballistics expert who said that's kind of what made sense. And there's a lot of crazy theories out there about JFK, but that one, and I've read them all, and that one makes the most sense to me.
Sounds less steel beams than your first one, I'd say.
Oh, my first one's absolutely out to lunch, but I know that, but it's just a wacky thing to say as a history major.
All right, well, another great conclusion to a Celtics podcast here. Chris, you must have some conspiracy theory that just really gets you going. Something that gets you stuck on Wikipedia for like hours on end.
He's too rational of a thinker.
That is true, but I know, like, there's got to be something. I'm going to kick myself as soon as I hang up. I'm going to think of something, like, super great that I'm, like, running through my head, but, like, I don't know, just nothing comes to mind. Like, Jared, you got any?
Well, actually, there was one that came out recently, which was, I think it was a former CIA agent, said that the Ayatollah Khomeini was actually paid off by the U.S. in order to, I think his argument was that the whole revolution in Iran was to help stabilize the price of oil to keep and to keep OPEC from taking all the oil out of circulation. So that one's pretty fascinating, but I really need to read up on it more to really
I just want
to
imagine all the people right now who, like, tuned in to get, like, who the Celtics are going to draft, like, who they're going to trade for, just from that insider perspective from Chris Forsberg, and now it's us talking about JFK theories and Ayatollah Khomeini.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, when you first brought it up before, you really made me feel bad about, like, my education level and what I think about. I was thinking, like, you know, did Chipotle plant that E. coli to shorten the lines?
And, that was just a typical stoned BC kid doing that. That was no conspiracy there.
Man, way to make me re-question my what I sit around and ponder.
All right, we're going to get you out. We're going to try to forget that entire conspiracy theory thing happened and get you out on one good one. A little lighter in the topics. We'll do rapid fire.
All right.
Why doesn't McDonald's sell hot dogs?
Oh, man. Well, they can't rapid fire.
Rapid fire. Rapid fire.
You can't sell hot dogs fast food. It just doesn't work. I mean, I guess Sonic does, right? So
Burger King does. I mean, it's just crappy meat and bread. They can throw it together. It doesn't matter what form. They could make a burger hot dog.
I don't know. When we're doing hot dogs, is hot dog a sandwich?
I don't care. I don't care for that debate. It's just, it's all crap food. Shove it in your mouth. Next question. Are eyebrows facial hair?
No.
Good answer. At the movie theater, which armrest is yours?
Let's see. Depends on which side. Like, you have to find in your mind the middle point of the row, and everyone on the right side gets the right, and everyone on the left side gets the left.
Wrong. It's both. Next question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm all out of questions.
That's it. All right.
All right, Chris, I thank you for just, this, as always, I mean, this is what we expected when we brought Chris Forsberg on.
Wait. Chris, you have a question that you want to ask yourself.
Why do I agree to do this podcast?
That is exactly my next question. All right. Well, that's it. Please. Chris Forsberg, ESPN. You got one more?
Yeah, no, I was going to say, for the sake of your listeners, please put Chad first.
Oh, yes. Oh, we're ending on this. This is way too exciting to not end on.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to take back my promise from about 30 minutes ago that you were going to go first, because really the people wouldn't listen to this. We would never get to Chad Finn if people had to listen through the last 15 minutes of audio.
I mean, we do this for the Seafoam Jones in the world. There are our great 25% of our fans that really just come here for this ridiculousness.
Danger Card's theory is that podcasts grind to a halt when you make the Twitter jokes. And I don't know if I agree. I do enjoy the fact that we go off the rails.
Well, that's because Danger Card is just a little white cat that has no taste in podcasts whatsoever.
My conspiracy theory?
Yes.
Danger Card is actually someone within the Celtics organization, and he's just, they sent out like some prop that night we met.
Oh, really? Because I was really confused when he wasn't a cat and I met him. I was like, you look more human being than cat. But that makes sense. It's probably Danny Ainge all along.
Danger Cart, not Danger Cat.
That's true.
So, well, yeah, I was really confused by your whole cat take.
No, because his profile picture is a little white cat.
Oh. All right, I'm calling.
But hey, if you're from Boston, it's Danger Cat.
Oh, it is Danger Cat.
It is Danger Cat.
All right, I'm calling shenanigans on this entire podcast.
All right.
It's going to be over. Chris Forsberg, ESPN Boston. thank you for joining us. And of course, we'll talk to you some point in the future. And hopefully we're going to get just as ridiculous in the next time.
Yeah, we make no promise. It's going to get off the rails just again.
All right. Thanks, Chris. That's going to wrap it up for us here at the WEEI Celtics podcast. For Jared, I am Sam Packard. Big thanks to Chad Finn and Chris Forsberg for joining us on the WEEI Celtics podcast. Next week, on Thursday, is the draft. We plan on doing something for it. We're not exactly sure yet. Jared, you look like you know what we're going to do.
I mean, I'm thinking Friday after the draft's over, we'll probably get into the studio and make some magic. Also, we forgot to thank anyone that's still listening at this point of the show, which is always, I think, a great accomplishment if you're able to stick with us this far into the program.
If you are still listening, please spread the word. Give us a subscribe on iTunes. Give us a rating.
Listen to us on WEEI.com, iTunes, Stitcher, CLNS Radio, mobile application. Of course, you can find links to our show when we tweet them out from our respective Twitter accounts. You can even find us on Grindr. We'll probably be telling you about our podcast.
That would be weird, but I'm open to it. As long as we can get more listeners, I think that's it's a great strategy.
We got to reach out to everybody, right?
All right, reach out, reach around. We'll do anything here at the WEEI Celtics Podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.